This is A Different Brilliant, an Aspect podcast focusing on the strengths, interests, and aspirations of the autistic community. Open, authentic, and engaging conversations about autism. Made for autistic people, parents, and carers of children on the autism spectrum. Welcome to A Different Brilliant.
Welcome to A Different Brilliant. I'm your host, Madeline Jane Lobsey, and I am an autistic ADHD mum, woman, and I also work with autistic ADHD people. And I'm really thrilled to be here on this podcast with a joyous human being. I've only just met them, but they are pure delight. We have with us today Kerry Chin, and Kerry is an autistic adult who is also on the advisory board at Aspect for the LGBTQIA plus community. Welcome. It's great to meet you. So we're going to talk about World Autism Understanding Day today. And look, I think it's a really big subject, and we're going to get to whatever we get to today. But I did want to say that most people would know it as World Autism Awareness Day. And Aspect actually, some time ago, made this really conscious decision, quite a bold decision actually, to change the name and move away from awareness to understanding, which I think is probably going to be the heart of what we talk about. And, you know, Kerry, we're going to talk about our personal experiences, and you will, but I think over the last couple of decades, things have really shifted. And, you know, there is, I would say on the whole, some level of awareness about autism, but it doesn't necessarily give you and I a world where we experience being understood. So, yeah, anything you want to say about that?
Yeah, my understanding of World Autism Awareness Day is that it has, over the years, developed quite a negative connotation amongst autistic people, because a lot of that awareness comes from perspectives of people who see autism as a defect and people who think that we need a cure, or people who want to eliminate autism, and that's left a lot of bitterness within the community. So I think a lot of autistic people actually dread the whole month of April for that.
Yeah.
And I think it's a step in the right direction for Aspect to focus on it being understanding, because awareness is not enough. It's about, yeah, understanding why we behave the way we do, why we need what we need, and actually doing something to support us. And yeah, there's also a lot of that awareness is limited to a very limited view of what autism is, where for a start, it's like we're not all, you know, little boys who love trains.
Well, I'm certainly not a little boy who loves trains. I quite like trains. Yeah, I think that's the amazing part, is even though people do, if you say autism, people at least have some idea about what it is. But I don't know about you, but I still experience a lot of myths, a lot of misconceptions, a lot of stereotypes. So, you know, I guess the point of this conversation and the point of Aspect doing what they're doing is to actually encourage people to learn more, like to go past the basic meaning of the word and actually really get to know the people around them, the autistic people around them, and discover what life is like about them. So, is there anything else? You know, I think if you just really introduce yourself, that'll start to create that autistic people are all kinds of humans in all sorts of ways. So how else would you introduce yourself? Tell us a bit about you.
Where do I start? See, on that point about loving trains, funnily enough, I do actually work in the rail industry, but not because I'm obsessed with trains. I work as an electrical engineer. I happen to work in the rail industry because that's the job I got when I was looking for jobs. But yeah, I've been at the same workplace since I finished university. It's been quite a number of years now, which I've been told is relatively unusual for people in my generation.
Yeah. Yeah. Full stop. Like anybody, autistic, not autistic, anybody, that's unusual. Yeah.
Yeah. I realize I fell into the trap of kind of starting with talking about my day job in introducing myself, which I think it is a bit unfortunate as well, because as a whole, I think as people, we've sometimes focus too much on work, and that's not good for anyone. But on a different level, because I do actually like my job, and I'm glad I have the job.
Yeah.
But other than that, I see myself as being more towards the introverted side, but I have the most active social life of anybody I know.
Wow. Okay. Say a bit more about that. Why?
My social life mostly revolves around organized groups, such as meetup and other kind of defined groups, which has its advantages in that. I think when I started going to these groups, my logic was that if I don't show up, it doesn't really matter because the other members of the groups are there to keep each other company. Nobody will actually miss me if I decide to drop out at the last minute. Mm. But I say that and I end up being one of the most committed regulars of a lot of my groups.
So let me ask you about another area of your life. Why are you on the LGBTQIA plus advisory committee for Aspect?
When I saw the opportunity come up, I decided to join that committee because I felt like I needed to be the representation that I want to see in the LGBTQIA plus alphabet soup. The A is often forgotten about. A can stand for aromantic, asexual, or agender, and I'm the first two of these. And I feel like it's like if I don't sign up, there wouldn't be any aromantic or asexual representation.
I imagine there's some people out there who wouldn't know what that means. So could you say in a basic way what that means?
So asexual is a sexual orientation that's defined by experiencing little to no sexual attraction. So in contrast with, for example, being straight or gay, meaning attracted to different and same sex respectively, where asexual is basically neither. Although there is a bit of grey area in that, and that's a whole topic in itself.
Yep. Yeah. And then aromantic?
It's defined as experiencing little to no romantic attraction. And for a lot of people, sexual and romantic attraction are linked, but for some people it's not. And it is kind of within the asexual community that this split attraction model of explaining the two concepts separately is more relevant for some of us than others. Where, so for example, I'm both aromantic and asexual, so I'm not sexually attracted to anyone, and I'm also not romantically attracted to anyone. I'm the kind of person who is single by choice and happy with it. But some people are one but not the other. So being asexual but not aromantic would mean that someone doesn't experience sexual attraction, but they still want a romantic partner. And that has a unique set of challenges because finding a compatible partner is therefore more difficult that way.
Mm.
Conversely, people can be aromantic but not asexual, so they want the sexual relationship but not necessarily the romantic part of it.
I mean, I think that's such a beautiful thing that you've started to create because, you know, that word intersectional or intersectionality gets said a lot, and I think it's another word that people don't really know what it means. But life, if you look at it like a bunch of pathways, life is like that and they cross, and some people are a whole multitude of crosses.
Yeah, I think these days it has turned into a bit of a buzzword, but it's an important concept. I think that's the point that's important to remember. It's like nobody is completely one-dimensional. For example, it's like being autistic is a core part of who I am, but it's also not everything that I am, and finding that right balance of knowing how much emphasis to put on any specific detail about one's life is kind of important in understanding.
Well, that leads me to another whole thing, because I think what you've just said is really critical, because yes, this is about World Autism Understanding Day, but I think, like you, Kerry, I often go, do I lead with that? Is that where I start? Hello, I'm Madeline, I'm autistic. Do I not? When do I say it? And even saying it, does it lead to understanding? I don't know. So in your own personal experience, is it something you lead with? And if you do, have you found that people have immediate misconceptions and stereotypes about you?
So I generally only mention that I'm autistic if it's relevant to the conversation.
Mm.
So generally, it's not something I would say off the bat when I introduce myself. Again, yeah, introducing oneself and what to say has always been challenging. And like I said earlier, where the stereotypical introduce myself by my day job, that which I actually consider unfortunate. But
yeah, it is. It's a tough one. But I guess when people do discover you're autistic or you introduce yourself as that, what are some of the misconceptions or stereotypes people have, you know?
These days, I think a common response I get is that, oh, but you're high functioning, right? Mm. Or more awkwardly, I think some people would tell me, it's like, oh, I would never have guessed. Where I think that's generally said with good intentions, but also has somewhat unfortunate implications, is that implying that you don't know why I'm autistic and that's a good thing, where that's in turn implies that being autistic is a bad thing. Of course, functioning labels is a whole topic in itself, and the misconception is often that it's a spectrum from high to low functioning, and that's a very seriously oversimplified view that's not always useful. Of course, functions in different aspects of our lives can vary. Some people can be struggling very seriously in one way while doing very well at others. So it's not a simple high or low functioning.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what you said is really important and not necessarily well known. And I've tried to explain it to people multiple ways. The best way I've found is thinking of it like a big sphere or a circle that could have points all over it, you know, like in different areas. Like, I experience life well in this part, but this bit's challenging. And then you end up with this kind of multitude star shape of...
It's the spiky profile of strengths and weaknesses.
Uh-huh.
Where my way of conceptualizing is more like kind of a slider, like the DJ panel with the different sliders on it. And yeah, where it's like, I have more of this one and not so much of that other one.
Yeah. I wish people could see you, because the DJ panel works very well for you. It's a good one for your look and vibe. So then let's talk about diagnosis, which again is another whole subject. But at what age were you diagnosed, and then what was it like for you?
So yeah, I was originally diagnosed when I was 7. So for context, I grew up in Hong Kong. I'm a transgender man, so at that age, I still looked like a girl. And so it's actually quite unusual for me, basically having grown up as a girl in the 1990s, to have received a diagnosis so early. And my mum took me to see a specialist, and I remember, I think the specialist worked in a school, and he didn't speak Cantonese. So yeah, my first language is Cantonese, English is my second language. I remember, in retrospect, that was such a weird thing, that like I had to go through the diagnostic test in my second language.
Wow. Oh, wow, that's a whole other thing I want to ask you about. I mean, that's wild, but go on, keep going.
So other than physically not looking like the stereotypical white boy, I was in some ways actually quite stereotypical as a child, in that I had the kind of monotonous voice and didn't make eye contact very well. My best subjects at school were maths and science, so that's another part of the stereotype. There weren't really trains in Hong Kong Island. We have a metro, but yeah, that's not quite the same. And I didn't live near a metro station, so yeah, that never quite got into that as a special interest.
Mm.
At my lifelong special interest is actually rats.
Oh, that's a whole podcast. Okay. Oh my goodness. Okay, my brain's gone all sorts of places. Okay. So you're 7, you're in Hong Kong, you have to be diagnosed in your second language. You're at that time presenting as a girl to the world. So this is all like very out of the ordinary, probably, at that time. And then I guess once you did get a diagnosis, can you even remember anything changing at that age? Like, did it change?
Well, because I was so young when I got the diagnosis, I don't think it really meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
I was just who I was. And so I remember that the test also came with an IQ test, which is problematic in its own way, but it did say that I had an above average IQ. Mm. So at least that was something for my mum to be happy about.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
So At that point, I went to a Hong Kong local school where I wasn't very happy at school either. I didn't have any friends. People didn't want anything to do with me. The weird thing at school was that at that age, I had reasonably good grades overall. And for that, I think my classmates kind of knew me to be smart.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think people also would call me the R word without noticing any apparent contradiction in what these words meant.
Wow. Yeah, it's hard to let that sink in, isn't it? Because there you are, living your life, you're smart, and yet whatever you were doing, however you were just being, which you keep saying is yourself, someone thought it was okay to call you the R word.
Kids can be very cruel, and I think that's always been, I think some adults seem to have a view that our kids get so pure, they haven't learned all the horrible prejudices of the adult world yet. It's like, how young are we talking here? I think even at primary or even kindy, I think no kids do know.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I can tell you they do, for sure. Okay, so there must have been a point. So now life moves on, and now, okay, you're autistic, but life's moving on. Was there a point where for you it became empowering, or a moment where you wanted to identify as that?
In terms of identifying as autistic, so following on from what was said earlier, when I eventually transferred to a different school, it was an international school, they provided more individual support, and my mum did mention that she had to pay extra for the extra support as well, but I received a lot of the kind of wrong kind of support. It was a lot of, because I think I got lumped in with other types of kids who needed extra support, and that wasn't what I needed. The more positive thing I could say is that it helped me develop. But moving forward from that, somewhere along the way in high school, the school sent a letter to my mum telling her that I've progressed a lot in my development. And I think my mum tried to take that to mean that no, I was never actually autistic in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And I think what it really created in my mind was that it was a bad thing that I should hide and not tell anyone. But moving further forward into university, so I did an engineering and arts double degree at Sydney Uni. My arts major was linguistics.
Wow.
Yes, this is relevant. One of the subjects I did was cross-cultural communication. Of course, it did mention a lot of expressions like body language and eye contact and things like that. And I think that actually brought out a whole side of experiences that I tried to avoid. It was basically kind of confronting, because one thing I remember learning at that point was that a detail that was mentioned was in some Asian cultures, it's respectful to look away, and therefore making eye contact isn't the same as what it is in Western cultures. And having grown up in Hong Kong, yeah, due to the colonial history, I think the expectations for eye contact in Hong Kong are probably closer to what it is in Australia than it is in, say, the rest of China.
Yeah.
So that one really didn't apply to me. It's like, I wish I knew that earlier. I wish that were true in Hong Kong, but no such luck. And I think living here in Australia, the one thing I have going for me is that being of Asian appearance, I think some people seem to be aware of this thing about eye contact being done differently in Asian cultures. And I think it actually works in my favor, because I don't do eye contact right, people will just assume it's
cultural thing.
That's usually better received than unexplained autistic trait.
Wow. Yes. Okay.
But following on from the getting to the original question, started confronting the idea, another big turning point for me was the workplace. I started working straight out of university as an electrical engineer, and I was in the grad program, and because as an engineer, we do have to go out on site, and so I received different sets of PPE. I was the one person who was like, yeah, I love the earplugs. But I had a hard time. One time we had a work conference, and during the actual speeches, it was fine. But during the lunch break, we were all out in the meal area, and it was very noisy when everyone was chatting. At that point, I was still kind of too shy to wear my earplugs in a non-construction setting. And then I think I had corded earplugs and they got tangled as well, so I couldn't put them in either, because I couldn't fix it in time, and that day ended very badly for me. But later on, at one of the offices I worked in, they had particularly nasty fluorescent lights, and that was a turning point because it pretty much almost ended my career. Wow. Plot twist, it didn't.
And why were the fluorescent lights such an issue?
My understanding is that fluorescent lights flicker at twice the supply frequency. And so even though to me they don't look like they're flickering, somehow still it registers to my body and it gives me a headache. Mm. So working full time in an office with fluorescent lights is actually very, very uncomfortable for me. I was lucky that at the time my placement manager was having kind of regular meetings with me to check how I was going, and I mentioned that I was having a problem with lights. And also, I think they had me sitting quite close to the printer, and the noise also annoyed me. But I was lucky that the manager said to me I could actually have, and he actually wondered why HR didn't already tell him that ahead of time. Because when I first got the job, I was actually afraid to disclose my disability, so I didn't actually have it on my record. And then I think I basically learned the hard way that it's like, no, they'd create... Yes, disclosing has its risks because that opens me up to being discriminated against, but not disclosing creates its own set of problems.
Yes.
Where I was lucky that my manager was supportive. I understand that's not the case for everyone. It's a double-edged sword, and yeah, sometimes you can't win either way.
Yeah, I think it is a really big deal, and I think you are really lucky that you had a great manager. And it sounds like even then, at that time in your life, able to advocate for yourself to whatever degree you could. And that's not typical, you know, that people either can advocate or that they get a great person who is understanding. So, you know, we have Autism Understanding Day for a reason. Like, there's still a long way to go. So anything else you want to say about that?
But yeah, from there, I went on to getting more involved in the kind of disability awareness space and learned more about different kinds of disabilities as well. And following more content creators online as well to read more about it. I think that year I actually... There used to be a thing called Autistic Speaking Day that was observed on the 1st of November. It's a blogging exercise where I think it's in response to, I think, another campaign that a lot of the autistic community doesn't agree with. It's speaking out against people who want to speak for us. But I wrote a piece about the stereotype of many engineers being a little bit autistic, because it is actually kind of ironic. As an engineer, one usually has to go on site, and work sites have like loud noises, a lot of dust and
people,
lights, and all sorts of horror. Well, in my industry, not necessarily,
so much.
But yeah, I work in the rail industry, and so the rail corridor's pretty long, and so we can kind of
avoid
spread
each
out,
other.
But, yeah. We have exclusion zones for some types of construction work for obvious reasons. Like if you have big machinery, it's like, no, everybody else keep out.
Yes.
But that's...
Yeah, so the environment, if we were going to be really stereotypical, the environment is not conducive to it. And yet there's this myth that, oh yeah, a lot of engineers are autistic.
Yeah, although, and then on the flip side, it's like the office has its own problems. It's like, yeah, fluorescent lights, the printer's too loud, my colleague's wearing really smelly deodorant. Yeah, that's a particularly unfortunate one, because I would feel rude commenting on the scent that somebody else is wearing, but it's bothering me big time.
Yeah, so look, Kerry, honestly, we could say so much about this, but if you were going to start to say some simple things, you know, because I think anyone listening to this either potentially is autistic themselves or loves and cares for someone who's autistic, or maybe they're just trying to really educate themselves and they'd love something simple that they could do or some action they could take that would make a difference. So what do you think some of those are?
Again, yeah, that's a big question, and everything kind of depends on context. But autistic people... Our needs can often be, a lot of it is either sensory or in communication. So if you're talking to someone who is autistic, you might want to make sure you use kind of more direct language and avoid kind of complicated metaphors and stuff.
Yeah.
Although that's not necessarily the case for everyone. So again, yeah, guidelines like this don't replace getting to know the person and what works for them. But another one is in sensory things. If you're going out in public, I think wearing too much scented product is a big no-no, not just for autistic people, also for people with like chemical sensitivities and stuff. So yes, understand that some people might really enjoy wearing perfume, but just, yeah, in moderation.
Yeah.
And in environments, if you're organizing any kind of social gatherings where... watch out for the venue having not being too noisy, maybe having somewhere for people to go and take a break in a quieter space. Mm. Although that good venues for anything is so hard to come by.
It's
so
really
easier
hard.
Said than done.
Yeah. I was at an event for International Women's Day and it was a beautiful venue. It, like you, I walked in, there were so many people, it was really noisy. And even as I was sitting in a corner, I couldn't get away from the noise and I physically couldn't get my heart rate to drop lower than 120. Mm. Just as a reaction to the sound. And this was a beautiful new modern building. So I think there's still a bunch of things for us to do. And I guess one of the questions I'm interested in for all of us is, what do you wish people would ask you? You know, if they want to get to know you, what kinds of things do you wish they'd want to know?
What I wish people would ask you? That's actually a difficult one because, again, yeah, so much of it depends on context.
Yeah. But if someone wants to form a relationship with you that's sort of beyond an acquaintance at work and they actually want to connect with you, what are the kinds of things that are important to you that they would be interested in about you?
I think for someone to get to know me, I would want them to understand why I live the way I do. Mm. For example, as I mentioned earlier, why my social life revolves around organized groups, what kind of groups I go to and why. But yeah, again, that's very specific to me because that's a tricky one for a lot of autistic people in that they don't necessarily have all these social groups to go to.
Yeah, I do. I think the heart of what you're saying is it's about getting to know the person in front of you.
Yeah.
And every single one of us is different. So, you know, if we were going to, I don't know, wrap this up, this giant conversation, Gary, you know, what would you want people to say or do this World Autism Understanding Day?
What for people to do, it really depends where they're coming from. But
yeah,
I think as a start, people who know what autism is but aren't familiar with it should actually look more into details of what it means to be autistic. As I said earlier, yeah, we're not all the same.
And I think that's probably actually the best thing people can do is to get educated. And there are lots of places you can get educated, including on Aspect's website. And they particularly, if you go to the aspect.org.au and then it's got /WAUD, World Autism Understanding Day, you can see a bunch of things. There's real stories, including from you, real stories, and there's like fact sheets or sheets, resources you can download, other videos, and including other episodes of this. And I think it's a great place for people to start in educating themselves, but I would always want to say connecting with some actually autistic people.
Yeah, it's important to know that this kind of background research is very useful, but if you actually know an autistic person, none of this replaces getting to know that person. And also, more importantly, I think if somebody tells you they're autistic, don't try to tell them they're not. And also, don't try to police how they describe themselves, where there's a whole debate on kind of identity first versus person first language, where, for example, personally, I use identity first language. I would say I'm autistic rather than I'm a person with autism. Mm. And I find that these days, I think people also often use on the spectrum as a euphemism, that like they want to avoid saying that somebody is autistic, and that's missing the point because being autistic is a core part of who we are, and it's not something that we can, like saying person with autism kind of implies it's a thing that's outside of us that we can just put down like a bag, and that's just not true.
Yes, agreed. Hear, hear, Kerry. Well, look, you are such a delight, like I said. You are just pure joy, and it's a total pleasure talking to you. And you are one of many autistic people in this country and across the world, and we really invite people to get to know us this World Autism Understanding Day. And thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to A Different Brilliant. An Aspect podcast focusing on the strengths, interests, and aspirations of the autistic community. If you would like to learn more, visit our website, aspect.org.au, to listen to past episodes or send us a message. Make sure to like or subscribe to A Different Brilliant on your podcast app.